Here we are in the Congressional Corner with David Hawkins, senior editor of Congressional Quarterly, the Bible of Congress, and Roll Call magazine, and author of the Hawkins Here blog and column. He's covered Congress in various positions at CQ since 1995. You've been there a long time, David. What accounts for your longevity? A paycheck?
A good, decent paycheck, fun people to work, smart people to work with. It's a good place to work. It's one of the better newsrooms in Washington, one of the least cutthroat newsrooms I've ever been in. So I've liked hanging out here.
And David Hawkins, how far is it from the Capitol itself, your offices?
Oh, we just moved. We're actually, we used to be right around the corner from the Capitol. Now we're downtown, right behind the White House. But on the Metro, I can get from my desk to the one of the chambers of Congress in about 20 minutes.
And how has electronic communication, in other words, the fact that you can turn on the TV and see these guys as opposed to going up there to see them, affected your life?
Oh, it certainly made it easier. I mean, there are some things that are just not there. There are so many things that happen in Congress that are sort of set pieces that you really don't have a chance. If you go up there to do any kind of value added reporting, you're just there in the mob. So watching it on TV is fine, but there is no substitute ultimately for going up there and walking the back hallways and trying to find members as they are slipping up and down stairs or getting on and off obscure elevators in the Capitol and buttonholing them. And, you know, by and large, it's so much more open. Covering Congress, the reason covering Congress is so much fun is that it's a sieve. I mean, the White House, this White House is kind of a sieve too, to be honest. But historically, the executive branch, way more buttoned up. Covering the White House developing sources in the White House is pretty tough. Developing sources in Congress is easy. You got, 535 people. You can always find somebody to talk trash about somebody else in Congress.
I see Gerald Nadler, a congressman from the West Side, where I grew up, pontificating a lot these days. He seems to have developed into a senior spokesman on the Trump transgressions or supposed transgressions.
Yeah, that's right. So he... So listeners may remember the name John Conyers Jr. from Detroit,
right.
Democratic congressman from Detroit, who was the first Democratic congressman to get in Me Too trouble. Several former staffers accused him of sexual impropriety, and he was compelled to resign. Mr. Conyers had been the top Democrat on the House Judiciary Committee for a couple of decades, and so that was and Jerry Nadler was next in line. There was a woman who thought about challenging him for that top Democratic job on the Judiciary Committee, but Mr. Nadler prevailed. And so if and when there are going to be deliberations that have anything to do with impeachment in the next Congress, should the Democrats take over, Mr. Nadler will be one of the most important members of Congress in the country as the chairman of that Judiciary Committee.
I remember when he ran a group of renegade young people on the west side of Manhattan who took over all the political clubs, and they were called the Kids. And here he is, one of the top guys. Okay,
and he's been around, since 1992, and now he's finally, takes a long time to build up the kind of seniority on the Democratic side that it takes to become the top dog on a committee.
Well, you just mentioned the midterms. How is your assessment going? I've heard all kinds of things. I've heard, this is the year for the Democrats, the party out of power from the president always wins big. And then lately I've been hearing little murmurings that the polling is getting narrower.
So the polling, right, there is the so-called generic ballot question, which almost every poll that gets done, all the major pollsters ask what they call the generic question, which is, do you plan to vote for a Republican or a Democrat for Congress this fall?
Right.
Or do you think that a Republican or a Democrat should be your representative? And generally, the Democrats are doing better on that, but it really does not correlate directly to the outcome. I mean, some back of the envelope pollsters and political pros say if that generic question is more than 7 or 8 points in favor of one party, that's the party that's going to win control of the House. And I don't think it's there right at the moment. But I do think that district by district, which is what my colleagues here at CQ and Roll Call really do look at it district by district, we assess every district. I think they feel as though it is the Democrats are very well positioned, district by district, to take back the House. In part because there are so many Republicans who are retiring, many of them in purple districts. There's a relatively small number of purple districts. There are only, I believe it was 25 districts that voted Senate Republican to Congress last year, 2 years ago, but also preferred Hillary Clinton. There are only 9 congressional districts in the whole country that sent a Democrat to Congress, but preferred Donald Trump for president. So there are really very few, sort of, if that's an easy definition of the purple districts, very few of them. But the Democrats have done a great job recruiting people to run in the so-called Hillary Republican seats.
Well, purple, you mean, of course, and just for our listeners to make sure everybody gets it, is a little blue, a little red, mixed up.
A little blue, a little red, right. So if you get purple. So if you get...
as we learned in kindergarten,
As you learned in kindergarten. So if you vote red for president, i.e. Donald Trump, and then you vote the same several hundred thousand people also vote Democratic for Congress, then that's purple district and vice versa.
And the other point of this is the evil gerrymander, right? Because it seems to me that a lot of state legislatures created Republican districts when they had the chance. And even though the generic odd vote for a Democrat over a Republican may be greater for the Democrats, it ain't enough because of the gerrymander.
That's right. There has already been one big case that required the map in Pennsylvania to be redrawn. So Pennsylvania was a classic gerrymandered state, just like you described. Democrats got essentially 50% of the overall congressional vote in that state in every election in this decade, and yet I think it was 13 of the 18 districts were Republican, and the state went Republican, and the state Supreme Court said that this is against the state constitution, an overly partisan gerrymander. Now the U.S. Supreme Court has 2 more cases like this that they're supposed to decide in June, one involving a pro Republican gerrymander in Wisconsin, one involving a pro-Democratic gerrymander in Maryland. The Supreme Court U.S. Supreme Court has never held that something could be too politically gerrymandered. They've said something could be too ethnically or racially gerrymandered, but they've never said political gerrymandering is unconstitutional. If they do, that could really open the floodgates to a very different set of maps, probably not in time for this election, but certainly in time for the next one.
But helpful to the Democrats. If they
definitely helpful to the Democrats. If that would be helpful to the Democrats, because the solid number of states are controlled. The state governments, the ones that draw the congressional maps, are run by the Republicans. So yes, this would work to the benefit of the Democrats.
Okay, we got 2 minutes, David Hawkins. I'd love to have you here, but why don't you explain in those 2 minutes some of the techniques that they use, both parties, to assure that their people win.
Oh, so we're going to talk about the two great words in political map making, packing and cracking. So packing is when you take every Democrat you can find, for example, in an urban sitting, and you try and cram them all in to one congressional district, so that a Democrat will win with 80-90% of the vote, and then all the other districts surrounding that city are reliably Republican. So that's packing. Cracking is the sort of the opposite. You take you try and spread out over as many districts as possible, just enough votes from one party or the other that they'll lose, and that the other guy will get by time and again with just enough votes to get through. What happened in Albany for many years was a similar case. There was downtown Albany and Capitol Land there, one Democratic district that tried to pack in as many Democrats as possible, and that freed up other upstate districts to be pretty reliably Republican. I don't think it's not that way anymore, but that's the way it used to be.
But it sounds like the state Senate, which has always been heavily into gerrymandering. Oh, great computer on the wall. Draw me a district where I can't lose. David Hawkins, it's always wonderful to talk to you. You're so smart. And when we come back the next time, we got all kinds of other questions for you. Thanks so much.
All right, Alan. Thank you.